Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number three of the Rob Brown Show is underway right now. I am Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo. Is on the ones and twos. You are welcome to be a part of the show by giving us a call at 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. That is also the number to text the radio broadcast, 844-326-3663. That's how you text us on the show. Our text line poll question of the day, are rivalries dead in the National Football League? My answer is yes. I have said it's because it's directly impacted me. It has now punched me in the face. The fact that my last head coach apologized to a rival for scoring a touchdown last year, and the fact that my current head coach did not do everything that he could to prevent a rival from getting a 1,000-yard mark yesterday after the game was already lost tells me, yes, rivalries are dead. You lost the game. So let me ask you this. I was going back and forth, and I'm like, how would I define a rivalry? Like, if you asked me to define a rivalry, ordinarily it would be like two entities that really dislike each other, and I think that's fine. I'm going to redefine it. Tell me if this is a fair definition. A rivalry is somebody that you're willing to get petty with just to make their life worse. That's right. I will get petty with you. You've already beat me on the scoreboard. I can't get you there. What I can do is stop your favorite player from hitting a milestone, and I'm going to sell out to do that. That is nuclear levels of petty, and I think I'm willing to get petty to ruin your day is the definition of rivalry. Is that too simplistic? I don't feel like it is. I feel like it's a pretty good definition.
Well, a person came to mind when you talk about personal rivalries, someone came to mind when you were saying that.
Sure.
For me. And so I think that might be pretty
accurate.
Well,
you haven't gotten petty against me yet, which is obviously who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And definitely
sure,
nobody else.
Sure. You can only be a rival with someone when you're kind of on equal footing.
Yeah, I'm not on your level.
Everyone
yet.
Knows,
fair.
Yeah, that
That's
you're
fair.
Not on my level.
That's fair. I think a rivalry is somebody you're willing to get petty to ruin their day. And that can be football team to football team. It can be coworker to coworker. It can be coworker to boss. It can be whatever. Somebody you're willing to get petty to ruin their day. And I don't really think we have a lot of that. I don't think we have a lot of places to where NFL teams are getting petty with each other. Maybe I'm wrong. So text 844-326-3663. If you feel like rivalries do exist in the NFL, text yes. If you feel like rivalries are dead in the NFL, text no. And if you feel like there is maybe just one, maybe two rivalries that are still real, text maybe and include your rivalry in that text. 844-326-3663.
I'm curious about how many people out there that's the selling point for watching their team. I mean, if your team had a bunch of rivalries, now they have none, does that make you not want to watch them anymore?
I don't know that it would stop me from watching my team.
I mean, there's added incentive if your team wins and wins big against your rival.
Yeah.
But what if they're winning every game, but there are no rivals?
I'm obviously less excited about particular games at that point, right? Like, I'm less excited about New Orleans Atlanta if I know the Saints aren't going to get petty when the time calls for it, right? Like, I want to go win the game, and then after winning the game, I want to make their day worse. I want Falcons fans to stop watching on TV. I want them leaving the stadium earlier. And I want that game to just, like, get stuck in the proverbial craw for a while. That's petty. I'm looking for petty.
Is it petty when one team beats another team and then you're excited because that other team and their fans are going to be quiet for an entire season?
I mean, it's kind of more fun, right? Like, it's kind of more fun. The South Carolina Clemson
fans. Except for
fans,
I don't get to play the meow very much anymore because, I mean, you know, it's because they're quiet.
The South Carolina Clemson fans have had this battle going where South Carolina fans are like, congrats on losing in the first round, losers. And Clemson fans are like, congrats on your playoff. Oh, that's right, you didn't get in, losers. And they've been getting after it on the social media. That's a rivalry.
So that means Clemson got
bounced in the first round of the playoffs, yes.
They got another loss, right. So they played in a bowl game.
And in fairness, so did the other team.
Yeah, they played in a bowl game, so did South Carolina, and they both lost. I don't know how it's an advantage.
Because one played in a playoff game and the other played in the Cheez-Its Bowl.
One played in a meaningless bowl, unless you love Cheez-Its, as I think both of us do.
I do love a Cheez-It.
And the other one got embarrassed in a national setting. I don't know.
I mean, again.
But one team did beat the other team, despite
rivalry,
what
baby.
Anyone wants to say.
Rivalry.
And you're right, there isn't really that in the NFL.
There's really not anymore. Or at least it doesn't feel like there is to me.
I dislike certain teams as usual because of their fans. I don't like Denver and I don't like Buffalo. And it's because of people that I've spent time around and their arrogance and their, when they win, oh, see, it's because you guys are so stupid.
See?
It's like, okay, dude, fine. All right.
See? All right. So our rivalry's dead.
And they did sound exactly like that.
Oh, I'm sure they did. No exaggeration required or necessary in that spot. So there's the question. Are rivalries dead in the NFL? That's our text poll question of the day. 844-326-3663. Text yes to say rivalries are dead. Text no to say rivalries are alive and fine. Or text maybe if there is a specific rivalry that you think in this case is indeed worth mentioning. 844-326-3663 is the number to make that happen. Let's do this. Let's get to the audio blitz. Some of the best audio that we have found since the last time that we were all together, which of course was last Friday, and we have to work a full week this week. Boo. That's okay. We do what we do. I want to play this clip for you. I know it's a couple of weeks old, but it really kind of stuck in my craw just a little bit. To hear this, because I kind of felt like I watched a place of sanctimony, sanctuary. That's the word I'm looking for. Those are different words.
Yeah, they're very different
words.
Those
are very different words. A place of sanctuary die. Scott. It's not Scott's fault. See, the phrase used to be 7 hours of commercial-free football starts now, but it's not anymore. Now it's 7 hours of red zone football because now red zone has commercials.
You know, I tuned in a couple times and I thought, wow, they accidentally played a commercial. They don't usually do that. So that was on purpose.
The NFL sold out.
Wow.
The NFL took the last place of football sacredness and have committed an atrocity, blasphemy against football. And I gotta tell you, like, I understand that football is a business. I understand that the NFL exists as a profit-generating enterprise. I understand that owners do not buy teams because they love the team. Owners buy teams to make money off of the team and off of us. I understand that if you want to be a fan of football, you have to accept that and be willing to feed the machine. But there was something for us in the red zone. There was something for us with the Red Zone channel. There was something that was just musical to Scott Hansen saying 7 hours of commercial-free football starts now. You had to sacrifice watching your specific team play your specific game, but I think most of us were willing to do that in order to have 7 hours of commercial-free football. I have said it time and time again. In the Rob Brown Show Bro Cave, it is a bro cave because all the bros are invited. In the Rob Brown Show Bro Cave on NFL Sunday, there are 5 screens. There is the big screen. There is the slightly smaller big screen. There is the small screen. And there are at least 2 laptops going at any given moment. And I have whatever games I want to watch, except on the slightly smaller screen, which has always been the Red Zone channel. And I have 1 universal remote that controls both of those TVs, the big screen and the little screen. The Saints go on the big screen. The Red Zone goes on the slightly bigger or the slightly less big screen. And I have the universal remote so that when I push the mute button, the sound flips. So I can just flip between the Saints game and Red Zone back and forth, right? And that used to be great because anytime the Saints went to commercial, I could pop over to the Red Zone, no commercials, right? I'm getting Scott Hansen going, we're going here, we're going to Detroit, we're going to Miami, we're going to San Diego. No, we're not. We're going to Los Angeles, wherever we're going next. And it was always great. And now it's 7 hours. Now, I know it's not Scott Hansen's fault because the first week that they did this, which I believe was week 15, maybe 14, but the first week that they did this, somebody put on Twitter, 7 hours of Red Zone football hurts my feelings. And Scott Hansen replied with a crying emoji and a vomiting emoji. So, like, he's obviously not happy about it either. But, like, that was the last bastion, and it has fallen. Now, this is a guy by the name of Dave Anthony. Dave hosts a podcast, and he was talking about baseball, but he had an interesting take that I also really liked. Yeah. I like that take. I really do. It's time in 2025 for us to sit back and relax and go back to enjoying sports.
So let me get this straight. So the sport that he's talking about is a sport that he goes to not actually watch the sport. He just goes there to hang out with his friends and have conversations.
No, I think.
And every once in a while, look over. Oh, yeah, it's time for a pitch.
I think
and then
this
go back
is,
to. I mean, it's.
I think this is one of those philosophical differences between you and I. You can do both. In fact, I regularly do both. I am the person who wants to go out to watch games. I want to go watch games with people. I want to go enjoy watch. I can still watch the ball and understand what's happening in the ball because I know the ball. But I like being around people. Baseball games are fun with people.
Why don't you just go to a sports bar? It'd be cheaper for you than paying the money to go to a big ballpark, paying the money to park, paying the extra money to buy food, and then you go there and you don't pay attention to the game? That's
See,
ridiculous.
Again, I literally just said I have the ability. Maybe it's because I'm a mega mind. But I have the ability to sit and have a conversation with someone.
You also have the ability to believe that everyone's like you and they're not.
I'm not saying everyone has to be. But what I'm saying is this whole thing where we're like, speed up, speed up, speed up, speed up, speed up. No, let's sit back and enjoy the sport. Let's sit back and enjoy what we're watching. It's art. Let's sit back and enjoy the art. All right, I got some more sound. We'll get to it in the next segment. We got a phone call. Let's get to it.
Yes, we have Wayne.
Wayne, it is your world, bro. What you got for us, big dog? Welcome in.
Hey, brother. Thank you. Listen, maybe I'm 60, so I've been around for a lot of it back in the day, and I've been following my Chargers since 74, I think. Mm-hmm. I do believe that the Chargers-Raiders rivalry is still – I believe that's one that really is still out there. By yesterday's game, you know, game's over with, you know, and the Raiders are still, for no reason, giving it everything. I believe that rivalry is still alive. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because to me, Wayne, like, I feel the Saints-Falcons rivalry is still real. But that's me. I don't know. Yeah. I guess the question would be better formatted, Wayne, if I said, do you feel like the rivalry is real for the players, for the dudes on the field wearing the jerseys and the helmets and the cleats? Yeah. Do you feel like if a guy comes to L.A., you pick up a free agent, and he comes to L.A., does it ingrain in him to the point that the next year when you play the Raiders, that guy goes, yo, bleep the Raiders, and goes out there and gives everything? Because to me, like, if I'm a Saint yesterday out there against the Bucs, a team I do consider a rival, I'm going to bust Mike Evans' ass before he gets that 5 yards, and nobody did.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, it probably is more with the fans, with the Raiders and the Chargers. I know with the fans it is, definitely. But I think even with some of the players, with the Raiders and Chargers, that's just a hated thing. I think a lot of them take pride in the, you know, in the history of it between the Raiders and Chargers. But I don't think, you know, I think maybe 80% of the old rivalries are probably gone. But I think the Chargers and the Raiders still have it on the field with the players. I really do.
That's fair. Appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. I will say this, Lonzo, based on the...
The Raiders are always angry, though, because when's the last time they're good enough to make the playoffs?
I was going to say, based on the responses we have been getting so far from the text line, if rivalries are still alive and well in the NFL, they all involve the Raiders.
Yeah.
All of them. It's Chiefs Raiders, it's Broncos Raiders, it's Chargers Raiders. It's just the rivalries exist in the AFC West and nowhere else, apparently, according to the text line. Are rivalries still real in the NFL? Text 844-326-3663. If you believe they are, text yes. If you believe they are not, rivalries are dead in the NFL, text no. And if you believe there is a rivalry or two left in the NFL, text maybe and include that rivalry in your text. Texter said, fan, there may be some individual player rivalries, but on a team basis, there are no rivalries anymore. Fan rivalry absolutely still exists, but I believe most players and coaches don't participate in team rivalries because they are looking out for their next spot just in case. I don't know. Good question. Texter said, maybe it was rivalry or just last game fun, but Adam, but have Thielen quarterback was fairly petty and also not good. Texter, clarify that for me because I want to give you your credit there. Clarify that for me. Texter said, I couldn't believe at the end of the Bears-Packers game, the boys were hugging afterwards. Rivalries are dead in the NFL. Texter said, maybe I think the NFC East is pretty intense. Anytime any of them play, specifically the Eagles and the Cowboys and maybe the Browns and the Steelers. Here's the thing. An Eagle and a Cowboy are doing a podcast together, like in the season. That's not, can I say your rivalry? When Micah Parsons, who's the Eagle, Darius Slay, Micah Parsons and Darius Slay are sitting down for a podcast once a week. Are those guys rivals? I don't know, man. I don't know. All right, we got more calls lined up. 844-326-3663 is the call-in and text-in number. Shoot us your text, give us a buzz. We'll talk more about this, get you some more sound from the audio blitz when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Rob Brown Show carries on. It's the Fan Upstate. Brian, if you want to give us a call back, I can get you right up there on the air. We had to go to a break. I apologize for that. Anybody else who wants to jump on the phone line with Brian, 844-326-3663, 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E is the number to be on the show. It is also a number to text the show, 844-326-3663, if you text the show. We are looking for the answer to this question. Are rivalries dead in the NFL? My answer is yes, and I learned that this weekend. I felt like it was already kind of trending that way, but with Dennis Allen apologizing for scoring a touchdown on our number one rival, the Atlanta Falcons, last year, with the Saints effectively just letting Mike Evans cross the 1,000-yard mark instead of stopping him, that's our number two rival. There was just a lot of that over the last year or two that has brought me to the belief that NFL rivalries are dead. So I want you to answer the question. 844-326-3663. Are rivalries dead in the NFL? Text yes. Text no. Yes, rivalries are dead. No, rivalries are alive. Or if you think there's maybe like one or two rivalries remaining that are worth anything, text maybe and include in that text the rivalry that you believe is still good to go. 844-326-3663 is the number if you want to get involved in that conversation. All right. Got some more sound that I wanted to get for you. Here on the show this AM, let's go with, have you seen this Tyreek Hill story? So after the game, and not even after the game yesterday, the Miami Dolphins were fighting for a chance to potentially make the playoffs. Had Denver lost to the Chiefs, Miami beaten the Jets, Miami would have gone to the playoffs. Cincinnati needed both those teams to win to get in. Oh, Lonzo. I mean, at this point, I'm just excited to hear it. I mean, I'm not excited for what we're about. I mean, I'm not excited for that guy. But it's also that's the expected one, right? Breaking news. Breaking news brought to you by BetQL. Be a better, be smarter, and beat the books with BetQL. And don't forget to listen to Bet for the Cycle every Saturday from noon to 4 with me, Rob Brown, and former Major League Baseball player Cody Decker. Noon to 4 every Saturday on the BetQL Network. It is Bet for the Cycle. Doug Peterson is out as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He is Nomas.
Surprise.
Yeah, this is, if we were power ranking, but in reverse, head coaches, like Doug Peterson's towards the top of that list.
You're going to blame this on Urban Meyer too?
No, this one's Doug Peterson ain't it. And again, I will say this. If they go get one more guy and it's the exact same results, then maybe it comes a point where we blame the owner. Maybe there is a point where we have to admit it just ain't Trevor Lawrence. But I'm not ready to put it on him just yet.
Just blame the running back.
Just any Clemson guy we can get our hands on.
Why not? Why not? Why not?
Just any Clemson guy we can get our hands on.
Got a couple to choose from there.
I don't know about that. I don't think I'm quite ready to go that far. I am willing to go as far as Doug Peterson clearly wasn't it.
So who else is on the list that you think is going to be let go today?
Coaches most likely to be fired today. Peterson was at the top of the list. I would say, who else is definitively getting fired today? I don't think Antonio Pierce. I think he's a threat. Does Mike McCarthy get the can today? Does Mike McCarthy... Here, by the way, and I asked this on Saturday. This was really interesting. Mike McCarthy has emerged, hilariously, as a leading, not the lead, but as a leading candidate in the Bears head coaching job and the Saints head coaching job. Mike McCarthy has worked with Mickey Loomis before. Apparently, Mickey Loomis, who... you want to talk about a fall from grace? Mickey Loomis organized and orchestrated a New Orleans Saints team that was a dominant force in the NFC South for like 12 years. And now everybody in New Orleans wants him gone because what are we doing? Because what are we doing, right? He promoted Dennis Allen. What are we doing? Apparently, Mickey Loomis wants to hire a head coach who will keep all of the assistant coaches in their roles right now. He's like, yeah, well, everything's great except the head coach. So we want to hire a new head coach, but keep all our assistant coaches. And apparently, they believe Mike McCarthy's a guy who will let them do that. So Mike McCarthy is now a leading candidate for the head coaching job in New Orleans. I'm going to throw up. But Mike McCarthy, hilariously, is the leading head coach. And for the record, I thought about this a lot. Because Saturday when it broke, I was like, what? Come on, dude. But the more I think about it, the more I think I maybe have to give Mike McCarthy a little grace. Because he works for Jerry Jones. You know what I mean? Like, there are how many coaches that we have said. You know, this coach probably ain't that bad, but we got him working for a GM that just doesn't get it, right? Scott Fitter at Carolina, right? I mean, maybe Matt Rule's better if Fitty wasn't his GM. I doubt it. I think he was just a dork that worked great at the college level, but not the NFL. But maybe things are different. I'll tell you right now, does Dan Morgan's roster building not feel a little different this year, especially in the back half of the year, than Fitterer's did? I mean, it does to me. So, like, maybe Mike McCarthy gets a little grace because Jerry Jones is good at being an owner, bad at being a GM. Do we give him any credit for that? If Mike McCarthy gets fired, do you roll the dice on a guy that kept getting Dallas close but was also asked to come into this year with Ezekiel, we already cut him once, Elliott, as his number, who replaced Tony Pollard, by the way? What a step down. That team has basically been Dak and CeeDee Lamb, by the way. And you want to? Here's another reason. Maybe we give Mike McCarthy some grace. Did you see what they did to Cooper Rush yesterday? This is infuriating. Cooper Rush, if he played 55% of the Dallas Cowboys snaps as the starter, if he played 55%, he was due a $500,000 bonus. He went into that game with 52% of the snaps played, which meant that Cooper Rush, if he had a good day and they played, you know, with extended drives, long possessions, yada, yada, yada. If he came into that and had a good day, Cooper Rush could have made $500,000. So they started Trey Lance and screwed Coop out of a quarter mil. Now, maybe a quarter million dollars ain't that much when Mike Evans is getting handed a $3 million check. But Cooper Rush is going to be a career backup quarterback. $250,000 is a lot of money for that cat. And so they decide going into week 18, after they've been eliminated from the playoffs for weeks now, they decide, no, we're going to save that $250,000 and we're going to play Trey Lance, who, by the way, looked atrocious, looked awful. You've been on the bench learning this offense all year, dog. You got to be ready. And he wasn't ready. When Jerry Jones is out here actively screwing players who stepped into roles to bail him out, Maybe we give Mike McCarthy a little grace. Maybe we give him a little credit. Darren Rizzi will not be the Saints head coach. Obviously, Thomas Brown will not be the Bears head coach. Jeff Ulbrich will not be the Jets head coach. I think McCarthy is probably out. Daboll's out with the Giants. Peterson's already out with the Jags. That's recent. Mayo's out with the Patriots. Maybe Antonio Pierce with the Raiders. Do you fire him with all that's gone on? I don't know. They were all excited to get him, and then it's meh. I don't know. Black Monday rolls on. We'll keep you abreast of everything. John Blau with the Post and Courier talks Clemson sports with us next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate Black Monday across the National Football League. We have two head coaches out so far. Gerard Mayo of the Patriots canned yesterday. Doug Peterson of the Jacksonville Jaguars was let go just a few minutes ago. We are keeping an eye on the breaking news ticker for you for when and if we find out of more coaching vacancies that pop open between here and 10 o'clock. But it is Monday. It is just about 8:40 in the a.m. And that means we welcome into the show a young man who covers the Clemson Tiger Athletic Department for the Post and Courier. John Blau joins the program to talk some CU Tigers with us. John, how we doing, big fella? Happy Monday.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Very well, except for it's our first week in like a month that I have to work all 5 days this week, and that's a little bit of a bummer, but we'll get through it.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
We do what we can.
Yes, we do. All right, big dog, let's get into some Clemson sports. We won't spend a ton of time on it, but it has been reported that Clemson has officially told Wes Goodwin that he will not return as the defensive coordinator, though I have seen it worded a couple of ways that I guess leave the door open for Wes Goodwin to remain with the program if he would like to. I'm not really sure if that's the way this has been structured and formatted or not. What's the most recent update you've got for us on the Wes Goodwin story?
Yeah, we're still waiting for official word from Clemson, but it obviously leaked out, like you said, last week, that he was told that he's not returning in that position. Whether that means that, I think there's been some rumors that maybe Brent Venables at Oklahoma might be interested in getting him a job, or he goes somewhere else, or it ends up just being he's let go completely. Either way, he's not coming back as a defensive coordinator. I think it's Larry Williams at Tiger Illustrated. I saw that he reported the possibility that Wes Goodwin was open to coming back as an analyst. Obviously, it was a remarkable promotion when he was promoted in late 2021 from analyst straight to defensive coordinator with no position coaching experience and no play calling experience. But so he's the type of guy that might be open to, hey, you gave me the chance, it didn't work out, I'll go back to being an analyst. That might be something that is possible too. So yeah, the wording has been a little, people have been careful in terms of trying how they're wording it, because we don't really know exactly, because Clemson has not clarified, but I would think in the next day or two we will have official clarification on what's going on there.
It is interesting in that this is now two coordinators after the departures of Tony Elliott and Brent Venables, both of the inside hires that Dabo Swinney has made on both sides of the football, did not work out. And listen, I'm not gonna crack on Dabo. That's just kind of how football works. I mean, if you hit on a guy that has production and development and works out, that guy usually is getting elevated to a head coaching position relatively quickly. Welcome to the competitive world of college football. The rumor I've heard, John Blau, and I know there's still a lot of rumor and innuendo floating around this, though, is that Dabo's been looking outside of the program, maybe for somebody that's been in a similar role at a big-time university, has some experience to fill in that position, and that he may go outside of the outside of the program to find the next DC. You partner that with the fact that he's gotten two now transfer portal players in. And I know you made a great point last week, which is it ain't been for a lack of effort that Dabo Swinney just got his first transfer portal players. It's just none of them has signed before this. But my question is, does this signify some sort of turning point for Dabo Swinney and his philosophy with the program, or is it probably still too early to know that for sure?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a change in philosophy. If you look back, obviously, Tony Elliott was replaced by Brandon Streeter. He gave an in-person or in-house hire a chance, and then it didn't work out. And then he went and got Garrett Riley. It might be similar here with Wes Goodwin, where, again, I gave my guy a chance, a guy who was in the building, who had put in the work. I gave him a chance, and then I go outside the building. So, I mean, he's done both in his time at Clemson. You know, he obviously is a very loyal guy. He believes in people. He not only believes in having a developmental program with players, but also developing coaches, and he tries to foster those relationships. And so I don't know if Dabo's ever going to change that way. I mean, I think he's always going to be a very loyal to his players, to his coaches. But at the same time, I don't think he's so loyal to a fault that he's not going to make an outside hire, or like we've talked about with transfers, look at offensive line, even though they don't come through, and then now look at defensive end, a couple of edge guys even, because there's reports of another linebacker slash edge, Jeremiah Alexander at Alabama, who they recruited out of high school. He's in the transfer portal. He might be another guy they're targeting. So, you know, I don't know if the full change. I think maybe he's making little teeny tiny steps in a certain direction. But I think it's always been kind of that way in terms of it, and will remain that way in terms of him having loyalty to people that are in his building.
John Blau with the Post and Courier joins us every Monday at 8:40 to talk Clemson athletics, talking a little football. We'll flip it over to basketball here in just a moment from now. The move of Wes Goodwin is obviously very interesting timing-wise, as obviously Wes's defense has kind of taken a step back a couple of years in a row. Is this a metric of just performance, John Blau, or is this perhaps a moment where Dabo Swinney's recognizing, like, we're not out of the big boys equation here, but we can't let ourselves slip too much further, and that was the trigger for the change?
I mean, I think it could be a combination of those things. But when you look at the offense a couple years ago with Garrett Riley, you know, he had a very specific idea in mind that we just need to be able to stop the pass, and we need to be able to pass the ball better, and this guy will help us do that better. And he thought that they would have a chance to get back to the playoffs if they did that. Obviously, it didn't. You know, it didn't happen immediately. It took a couple of years for Garrett Riley to get that offense turned around, especially with a first-year quarterback. I think there's a little bit of urgency with this move as well. I mean, you look at what they have now coming back on offense. Kate Klubnik coming back, all of his top receivers coming back, 4 out of 5 on the offensive line coming back. You have a chance to be a really good offense. You don't want to have a bunch of 38 to 31 shootouts if the defense continues to regress. So it's definitely trying to keep the standard at a certain place. They didn't meet the standard. They have too many 4- and 5-star talents on the defensive side of the ball for them to be playing the way they're playing, with just a lack of discipline, gap integrity, you know, just giving up big plays, not able to hold an edge, things like that. So, yeah, this is just, you know, trying to hold to a certain place and obviously take advantage of an opportunity with an offense that could be great next year. You just can't have a defense that's lagging behind. So I don't know if it's, you know, purely because of just kind of the circumstance and all that. I think obviously if you're Clemson and you've been in the elite program and you spend a lot of money on coaches and a lot of has been invested in trying to be an elite program, you obviously make the moves you have to keep it there, and that's what they're doing here at defensive coordinator.
We are talking to John Blau from the Post and Courier here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Let's flip it over to the shooty hoops here for just a second, John Blau. Clemson had a couple of losses back-to-back, a close one against a pretty good Memphis Tiger team, and then obviously a roadie out to Columbia that they dropped by 3 to the Gamecocks. Since then, a 3-game win streak in conference. They get 3 straight home wins over Wake Forest, Stanford, and Cal, despite Cal having Stojakovic go off in this game for 30. If I asked you for kind of the 36,000-foot view of what we're seeing out of Clemson basketball before we dive into the specifics that define the early portion of 2024-25, what would you say they are?
Pretty good defensively. I think Jaden Zachary, the guard from Boston College, like he's really turned out to be the perimeter defender that they've really been looking for the last couple of years. They can, you know, press a guy full court, get right up in somebody's nose. Just a game changer there in terms of kind of what they have defensively. And then Victor Watkins, the big man from Cincy, you know, playing through illness, but being a post presence, really making, you know, just scrappy plays, just a lot of energy, passion. They have a lot of guys they brought into the mix that have really gelled together probably more quickly than anybody would have thought, that have really been able to kind of up the defensive, you know, just continuity, the effort, the just absolute physicality that they bring, that has made them a really tough team to beat. Even if they're not having the best shooting night in the world, they can win games on the defensive end of the floor. And I think that's really what's carried them through thus far in this 4-0 start in ACC play.
I think one of the things that jumps out, at least about this game against a 7-7 Cal team, is that Clemson shot 62%, 31 of 50 from the floor, and 44%, above 44% from the three-point line. Was this an anomaly, or is this the indication that Clemson's going to play a more, maybe a little less exciting but more efficient offense this year?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have guys who would score. Obviously, Chase Hunter is a totally different player than he was 3 years ago, just a very mature guy, you know, I think I saw somebody tweet about, like, Chase Hunter just figured out he could just dunk everything. And he had 4 or 5 dunks in that game against Cal. He's an athletic guy, is able to finish on stuff like that. And they have, you know, Ian Sheflin is a mature guy. Dylan Hunter's got a lot better. His shot has improved a ton. They have a bunch of guys who can score, but they are a little streaky, I would say, in that way. They're going to have nights where they come out and they hit, you know, 4 out of their first 16 shots. I mean, it's just going to be this team. And again, that's why I go back to the defensive end of the floor. I really do think that's where they are the most solid, or exceptional, maybe even should be the word. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely a team that has that potential to shoot and be able to make shots. It's just about whether, you know, it ever becomes, like you said, incredibly efficient, consistent. That's going to be something, I guess, to watch the rest of the season.
John Blau from the Post and Courier joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Looking ahead from these games, a couple of interesting ones coming up. You're on the road. First ACC road test at Louisville tomorrow evening. You turn it around and come back to the crib on January 11th against a Florida State team that's not what they were a couple of years ago, John Blau, but also gave Syracuse a run for the money and actually stole a dub away from the Orange a couple of days ago. Not a Florida State team to be looked past. If you have a bad day, they'll get you. So what is the what's the direction for Clemson in these next couple of games, which I think are kind of tone setter games for this team about what they are going to be as we dig into the meat and potatoes of the season?
Yeah, because obviously you're going back on the road. They had one road win at Miami, but Miami's had a really, really down year this year. And Louisville is a team that's trending in the right direction. Obviously, Pat Kelsey, the former College of Charleston coach, he brought a bunch of transfers. This is a much better Louisville team than Clemson's seen over the last couple of years. And obviously, Clemson lost a game to a not-so-good Louisville team a couple of years ago that really hurt their NCAA tournament resume, ended up not making the field. So, yeah, it's a very important game, finally, again, going on the road against a good opponent. And like you said, coming back home, you know, Florida State, you know, Leonard Hamilton, one of the more experienced coaches in the league. I know he's had a couple issues lately with the NIL front in terms of players saying they were promised money and yada, yada, yada. But obviously he's not gone away, and his whole roster has not gone away either. And so they're still pretty, you know, athletic, pretty talented as always. So, yeah, this is an interesting stretch. And then you got Georgia Tech with Dana Sotomayor and Nathan George and a bunch of talented guys there as well. So yeah, no, it doesn't let up. I mean, this is a pretty good ACC. I know it's obviously not judged as top tier elite if you look at the net rankings and kind of just the narrative, but there's a lot of teams that can beat you, and obviously Clemson can't take up too much of a breather. They could get knocked off.
John Blau covers the Clemson Tigers for the Post and Courier. Joins us every Monday at 8:40 a.m. to talk Tiger athletics. John, my man, thanks for the time. As always, big dog. We will check back in with you next week, pal.
Sounds good. Thanks, Rob.
Done and done. John Blau for the Post and Courier.
All right, I'm not playing the other one because this is the opposite of a firing.
Somebody's hired already.
According to Adam Schefter, the New York Giants have put out a statement. Now that our season is over, we felt it necessary to make the statement. Joe, I think you said Sheen is his name?
Shine.
Yep. Shone, whatever his name is. And Brian Daboll will continue in their respective roles with the organization. As disappointing as the results of the season have been, Steve Tisch and I remain confident in the process that Joe and Brian have implemented and their visions for our team. We look forward to the future. And achieving the results we all desire.
Oh, no. Welfare check on Chris Lewis. Chris Lewis, president of the Greenville Triumph, noted and enormous New York Giants fan. I'm going to need you to check in right now. That's very painful. You know how the thing was a week ago? We were all making fun of Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets. The reason he didn't go get Jerry Jeudy, who was balling out for Cleveland, was because his kids said his Madden rating isn't good enough. You remember that story from last week?
It's very important.
Yeah, here's Hard Knocks. Here's Joe Schein talking to his kids leading up to the draft. Jaden Daniels! Yes! Joe Schein's kid's a better GM than Joe Schein!
By the way, the backup plan wasn't too bad either, if you couldn't get
Malik Nabers!
And then he also said Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah!
So, I mean...
Pretty good list!
Yeah, it was.
Pretty good list! I'm sorry, was that not good enough? Here's Brian Daboll talking about a conversation he had before the draft with Nick Saban. Yeah, Nick Saban said get Malik or get Brock Bowers. And Joe Schein's children said Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, or Marvin Harrison Jr. There's five guys right there that the GM and the head coach got told by everybody else. These dudes, when Nick Saban says a guy is a problem, when Nick Saban says a guy's a problem, you should probably listen to Nick Saban. Probably listen to the guy. Joe Schein's kids were like, hey, here's the list. Here's the guys. Get up and go get them. Make it happen. The Jets with pick number 11 went and got Olufoshanu, an offensive tackle out of Penn State. And it's a good, it's a fine pick. It's a fine pick. He was one of the best tackles out there. The best off the board already were Joe Alt and J.C. Latham, really the only two guys that I'm like, if that guy falls, you got to get him. Olufoshanu was a fine pick at 11. Guess who went next? Bo Nix. Guess who went next? Brock Bowers. Guess who went next? Diet Oos Talese Fuaga, who was balling for the Saints. Jared Verse went 8 picks later. Jared Verse has been a revelation for the L.A. Rams. Brian Thomas Jr. went to Jacksonville. If Malik Nabers wasn't an LSU Tiger, Brian Thomas Jr. would have been in the top 10. He's that good. Terrion Arnold went to Detroit. He was a baller till he got banged up last night. Xavier Worthy went off the board 17 picks later to the Kansas City Chiefs. Would have been really nice if they took him in that spot. Ricky Pearsall went 31st, has been balling out. They went with a second-round offensive tackle in Olufoshanu when Joe Schein's kid was like, yo, Jaden Daniels is Malik Nabers. They're all right there. Marvin Harrison Jr. right there. Nick Saban went, yeah, I'd get Malik or Brock Bowers. And the Giants went, nah, let's get that offensive tackle out of Penn State. Good gosh. Chris Lewis, my thoughts are with you, especially if you are thinking about finding a new team to root for. I root for Team Lonzo.
As you should. We always win. The NFC North and the NFC's number one overall seed belong to the Detroit Lions. After a 31-9 win over the Minnesota Vikings last night, Detroit capitalized on the kick out of bounds with 15 seconds left in the first half to take a 10-6 lead. And Jahmyr Gibbs, 3 rushing and 1 receiving touchdown night, put Minnesota away. Vikings quarterback Sam Darnold recorded only 166 passing yards, and the Vikings scored 0 touchdowns. Week 1 of the NFL playoffs are scheduled. The wild card round kicks off next Saturday when the Chargers visit the Texans at 4:30 and the Steelers take on Baltimore at 8. On Sunday, the Broncos visit the Bills, the Packers travel to Philadelphia, and Tampa Bay hosts Washington Monday night. The Vikings take on the Rams in L.A. Tune in Wednesday at 6:30 as the Furman Paladins take on Citadel Bulldogs. It's Furman versus Citadel right here on your home for Furman basketball, the Fan, Upstate.